Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the Retro Mix podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us. Welcome to the Retro Mix podcast. Today's guest is debut YA author, Chloe Gong. In this interview, we chat with Chloe about her writing process while she was in college. We chat what inspired her to write a retelling of Romeo and Juliet set in Shanghai and about her book. Now let's go to the interview. Hi, Chloe. Welcome to the Retro Mix podcast.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
So happy to have you here. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. So I'm Chloe. I am currently a senior at the University of Pennsylvania, where I major in English and International Relations. And I am a YA writer because I love writing stories and I love telling stories for the YA audience. So that's what I get up to when I'm not in school.
I love you. So how do you balance schoolwork and writing?
Oh my god, with a lot of screaming into the pillow occasionally. Mm-hmm. I definitely have to keep like my time management at the utmost, like top of my priority list, because like being in school, it means like a lot of things will be like more pressing than like writing, like my writing process, because you know there'll be an essay due like the next day, there'll be an assignment due the next week. So I really have to like block out my time to be like, okay, like this part of the day specifically will be for schoolwork, and then this part specifically will have to be for revision, because if I don't do it, then I have like deadlines at school that I'll be missing and deadlines from my publishing house that I'll be missing. So to make sure that that doesn't happen, like a lot of careful time management, which is rough, but has to be done.
It is. So when inspired you to become a writer?
I think I've always been a really, really, really big reader. So I started writing in high school, like at the very start of high school, because I had always read a lot. And I think it's because I like came into like my teenage years while YA was like really, really big. Mm-hmm. So when I really got into reading, there were already these like pre-existing like fandoms online and stuff. Mm-hmm. So it was really easy to get like super obsessed. Like it wasn't just this like pastime thing. It was like, okay, I've finished this book series and now like I have people to talk about it with. I have like ideas to like go off on, all of that stuff, where it really became more of this like this whole world that I was occupying rather than just like a casual hobby. So it really became like a central core of my personality to be like a reader, to be like a like consumer of like YA literature. So like throughout high school, like if I didn't have much else to do, like another thing of like my personality was just to like tell stories, because like I liked consuming it, like I liked making my own. So like honestly, like my writing journey in a sense really started like I didn't realize that I was a writer until like really late on, like at the end of high school almost, because I always like saw it as like I was just telling myself stories. I was just like typing out like notes on my like iPad, like notes app, like literally, like it wasn't even on like a real word processor, it was just like on the app, so it didn't look like a manuscript. Like I never thought about them as books, but like in retrospect they were all like giant books that I was writing like every year in high school. So because like telling stories, consuming stories was just so big, like that was just how I got into writing, like just as a form of like entertainment rather than thinking, oh, like I'm gonna become a writer. It was more like, oh, I'm gonna like contribute to the YA like sphere.
Mm-hmm. So what were some of those YA books that you enjoyed, that you consumed, that
your different world? My god, all the like big, it was so not the like big ones that really took off in YA. So I was like almost too young for the Hunger Games and Twilight. It was the ones that came right after them, like The Mortal Instruments, Fallen by Lauren Kay, The Daughter of Smoke and Bone trilogy. Like, I'm looking at my bookshelves right now to like try to see what else it was. What were the other big ones? Basically, like the dystopian era and the paranormal romance era, like that boom was when I was really getting into it. Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah, I got into YA reading in 2016, and then I've been to read, I think, Sarah J. Maas and some Leigh Bardugo, and then I ended up finding romance. Like, I got into YA based on YouTube for me.
Like, that was the book, yeah, me too. I watched booktubers all the time as well.
Yeah, it was, like, really fun. Like, I had someone tell me, like, there's the YouTube community about books, and most of them talk about YA fantasy, and I was like, okay. Like, I start reading again, and it was thanks to that community that got me into it, and then I discovered other genres, which was kind of, like, fun, but it was fun to see, like, all those different aspects of, like, books that can take you to a different place.
Right, yeah, like, when there are other people talking about it, it makes it so much more fun than just you consuming it yourself, yeah.
Yeah, so what was your journey to get your first book published?
Ooh, so my debut that I have coming out, These Mountains Lights, was the first book that I actually wrote that I thought about, like, as a book. So prior to that one, everything I wrote, I would call it, like, a story rather than a book, because I thought about them as just, like these long-form, like, stories. And, like, sometimes I'd put them online and all of that, so it didn't seem to me like a manuscript that could be, like, on shelves. But then when I got, like, that idea, I was like, this seems like it might, like, do well, like, with the current, like, YA sphere that, like, I've been reading and I've been enjoying. So by then, that was, well, I got the idea right before freshman year of college. So I, like, had, like, some of the initial outline. I had an idea of, like, how I wanted to look like. But then I, like, went to college, and, like, I moved countries, right? So I moved from New Zealand to, like, Philadelphia, where I started, like, school. And because of that, like, I basically couldn't write the entire first year because I was just so busy, like, with adjustment and with school. So it was, like, on hold for, like, a long while. But the entire time I was, like, in freshman year of college, I was, like, thinking about it. So it was, like, permeating, like, in my head. Like, the idea was, like, growing, like, in, like, formation, I guess. So after freshman year, when I went back home for the summer, I basically, like, wrote the entire manuscript in, like maybe, like, 1 or 2 months, I think. Like, it came out really fast because I'd been, like hesitantly, like, outlining. I'd been thinking about what it would look like. So by the time I actually sat down and wrote, like, as long as I had the time, and I had so much time because it was summer, right? I had nothing else to be doing. As soon as I had the time and I sat down for it, it all came out, like, really, really fast. And it came out relatively clean because I'm a clean drafter, since, like, as soon as I know what I'm, like, doing, it tends to, I don't change too much. So that summer, like, between freshman year and sophomore year, I started researching, like, agents, because by then I'd, like, researched enough to know, like, okay, so that was the process you go through, like, get an query agents, sign with an agent, and then agents take you to the editors, and only then do you get, like, the book deal sale. So I, like, did a lot of, like, really intensive research because I didn't want to just, like, randomly throw my manuscript at agents. Like, I wanted, like, to really pinpoint the ones who would be, like, representing the things I wrote. So I did a lot of research, and then I sent it out to, like, a very, very, like, curated list. And then it would have been, like, June, July-ish, I think. I got responses relatively fast because I had curated it so, like, nicely. So, like, a lot of times when people, like, hear about my stats, because I, like my request rate was, like, really good. And then I don't think I got, like, a lot. I got rejections, but, like, not a lot. Like, not enough to, like, hurt me. But, like, when people hear about it, they're like, wow, like, you're so lucky. And it was, like, it wasn't really luck. It was that I, like, really targeted people that, like, I knew, like, you would, like this book. So it all happened, like, relatively fast because of that too, I think. So I signed with my agent 1 month exactly to when I sent out the query. So mm-hmm. in like a whole month, I was like done with the whole process. Like I had an agent and we were like ready to like get this book into like publishing format, which was super exciting. And so that was like July-ish, I think. Like we did some revisions. And then we were on sub right before I started sophomore year of college. So then as like editors were reading my book, I was like going through school as well, like because sophomore year suddenly is like hotter than freshman year. I was like, damn, I'm really leading a double life here. And then we sold the book in an auction in my second semester of sophomore year, right as we started. So I still remember I was like at a Starbucks doing my British poetry readings, and then the little email came in being like, oh, we have an offer, and I was like, yay. So that was the journey to getting it published.
Oh my gosh. And so you work on the book after getting the journey of published for about a year and a half before it gets to publication day. So it's been like 3 years?
Yeah, it would have been, it's like up to 3 years now. Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's so now it's the summer senior year.
That's insane.
Long time. Yeah.
Well, so what are we writing? What does your writing process look like? You mentioned your clean draft. So what is your, do you do more revisions or what's our process looks like for you?
Yeah. I tend to be a heavy outliner, which is why my drafts come out pretty clean. So I essentially call my outlines like draft zero because they are so extensive to the point where like everything that I know already that will go on page, I will like put in my outline. So oftentimes my outline will literally read like a complete stream of consciousness with like dialogue, with like almost stage directions, like what they will be doing, what I want to be achieving. It'll have like bits of descriptions, like even more extensively than I will actually like write it when I do end up like writing the draft itself. And then I don't necessarily have to finish the outline before I dropped, but I have to have a scene outlined before I actually write it. So because of that, like, I think I'm a very intensive, like, plotter. Like, I have to know what's going on before I can do it. Like, I can't, like, I know a lot of people, their process is more like you discover it as you go, but I cannot do that. I cannot wait around. Like, all it'll do is just confuse me and, like, I'll just have no idea what I'm doing. So I definitely have to, it has to like percolate in my head first. And then once I know what's happening, only then can I really like make it get onto like story form. So because of that, my like revisioning process also tends to be like lighter, unless like my editor tells me like we should go in a different direction, in which case then it becomes more like expansive. But usually unless it's about like plot issues or like expanding on character issues, I don't tend to revise on a line level that much because I've already like thought about it so extensively before I even put the words down.
Fascinating. I'm always curious to hear how authors come about with their stories, and like you know, the Harry Potter's, like how much you know you get to think about it, think about the problem before you even get to write it. You know, so how do you develop your characters? Like, how do you connect with them? Do you, as you plot them along, do you write them down, everything that you know down? Or do you do like some character work, like workshop, like worksheets, or what's the process like for the characters?
I tend to develop characters sort of in the same way that I do like the like extensive outlining. Mm-hmm. So kind of like how when I outline plot, it'll almost read like a completely incoherent screenplay. Like my outlines will make no sense to anyone but myself. And my outlines for like character tends to be the same. So I'll kind of like put the character name down, their big facts, and then I'll just kind of like word vomit like everything I know about them, everything that's relevant to the book, even everything that's like kind of irrelevant to the book, but like it's still important for me to know so that I understand like the core of like what they want and where they're eventually going to go, like at the story's end. I tend not to use like worksheets and more structured things because I found that I don't follow like other people's structure well, which sounds funny because that just makes me sound kind of rebellious. But in honest, honestly, it's just because, like, I tend to just clump everything together and then I make sense of it, like, just with, like, my own, the way I do things. Like, I can't, like, make sense of the way other people want to lay it out. It has to be, like, just dumped in and then I'll pick it apart. So it just, yeah.
I love your process. I'm like fascinated because I can identify with that whole idea. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't like the structure. I like to pick things apart. Mm. You know, like, just do a brain dump and then, like, it would just, like, it'll make sense in my head. It may not make sense to somebody else, but then it would just, I'll pick it apart and I'll put it together in a different way. And then it'll come nice.
Exactly. That's what matters. As long as we get it, as long as we, like, make sense of the brain dump, that's all that matters.
Yeah. So your book is set in Shanghai, 1920s. What was that research process like? How do you research that?
Oh, man. I spent so long on the, like, floor of the school library, just, like, sitting down, like, going through the stacks. So I'd already started with, like, a pre-existing, like, knowledge base of, like, that time period, because I had heard a lot of stories from my parents and my relatives, because my parents grew up in Shanghai before they immigrated with me to New Zealand. So they are incredibly, like, familiar with the city, and I'm, like, familiar with the modern version of it because, like, I visited often to go, like, see relatives and things. So I had an idea about, like, the atmosphere, about, like, some of the history, like, things I've been told, like, stories I've been told, and things I've, like, even stumbled onto myself. But, like, because it was, like, a historical setting, like, I didn't want to make it, like, a secondary world fantasy or anything. Like, even though I was making a lot of stuff up, like, the gangs and the monsters were all made up, but the setting itself, I wanted to stick to, like, the historical details. So because of that, like, I knew I actually needed, like, real research. Like, I couldn't just, like, go off of, like, vaguely what I knew. Because even if I were to, like, vaguely write about, like, Auckland, New Zealand, where I actually grew up, I probably wouldn't know, like, anything about it, like, the actual details without, like, looking into it. So I was like, okay, I've got to go to the library. So I honestly, essentially, like, for about a week, I think, like, this was after I'd written a lot of it. This was more of, like, research afterwards to ensure that my atmosphere was right, like, some of the details were right, like, just to, like, beef up a lot of the, like, historically accurate things. So I would, like, go to the, like, nonfiction, like, the floor, since the school library is, like, gigantic, and I would find the special section, like, labeled, like, 1920s China, because there was actually a section for that, funnily, and it was on the very, like, lower shelf. So I just sat there and I just, like, flipped through, like, every single book, because I don't want to check them out either. Otherwise, I'd just be, like, going to the front desk with, like, a huge hole. But yeah, I just came back to that spot every day and I would flip through. And then any information that I found was good, I would, like, note down. Any, like, statistics that were, like, interesting to get, like, a sense of the vibe, I took pictures with. I took pictures of. And, like, with that, I kind of just had a sense of, like, the vibes almost was what was most important, because a lot of, like, even the historical detail that I pulled from the books ended up getting cut anyway, because it wasn't as important. Like, there were a lot of times where I would insert the historical details and then later find that they were messing with the, like, core story a bit too much. Mm-hmm. So because of that, it was, like, it was good that I, like, me myself knew the details so that I know how to approach this, like, the way I was presenting it. But then ultimately some details, like, the reader didn't necessarily need to know in that depth, like, to get what I was, like, to get the story I was trying to tell. So a lot of the times, a lot of it got cut, but, you know, in the end, the research was still, it was still, like, useful because it helps, like, shape the bigger picture.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. I think it just, like, when you're setting up the world, like, the author needs to know more information that, you know, than the reader does. Like, reader's like, oh, okay, you know, the author, like, what was the author thinking? The author's like, I know what's happening here, you know.
I did my research, yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk about This While in the Lights. What was the source of inspiration?
I definitely, okay. So, because it's a Romeo and Juliet retelling, a lot of times I think people think that I started from that base, but it was actually, I initially wanted to write a story about a blood feud, and I also wanted to set it in the Roaring Twenties. So the way that it kind of, there were a lot of like crossed wires before I ultimately got to the concept that it is now, because I would work around like the blood feud idea, and then the like no matter which way I developed it, it became quite clear that like you can't really tell a story about like a blood feud or like star-crossed lovers on two sides of like a conflict without really like without people automatically being like, oh, like Romeo and Juliet, like you know, like, oh, is that what you're doing? And it was like, because Romeo and Juliet is such a foundational like touchstone text for those types of stories, I thought it was like much more interesting for me to actually like head on engage with it rather than work around it and be like, oh no, like this is my own story, like it's nothing to do with it, don't worry. Because like in a way, like no story now is unique anymore. Because everything, like every idea has been engaged with. It just depends on how you execute it. So I almost thought it would be more interesting if I really did take the original core of the idea that already pre-exists and then do something like completely new with it. So that was how I ended up stumbling like into actually engaging with Romeo and Juliet like as a retelling like for the book's real concept. And it was like it was fun for me too because I do really like Shakespeare and I do really like the way he uses language. I really love the themes that he was going at in Romeo and Juliet. So I thought it would be like so interesting for me to like really engage with it and like not just take the characters and then rewrite the plot a little, but like actually really like completely reimagine it, but still be returning to like the heart of like what he's saying. Like that was something that like just seemed the most engaging to me. And especially as like an English major, I was like, okay, I want to write something that someone could like analyze for like 100 pages. Like I'm gonna put the symbolism in there. But yeah. So once I had like the retelling aspect of it, like the way that I knew I wanted to engage with a lot of the themes, like I knew that I wanted to take like Shakespeare's ideas of like love and hate and family, and then kind of like expand it outwards more to look at like, you know, what hate does, hate between like two groups, what it does, like where it comes from and all that. And that kind of stems into things like, you know, colonialism and imperialism, and then like hate from that aspect, and then hate when it's like your two groups that are equal fighting against colonialism. So that's how like a lot of the groups in like this book then came about. And so that was like that kind of came tangentially with me deciding that if I was going to sit in the Roaring Twenties, I might sit it in Shanghai because that was like one of the centers like of the world at that time that had like people, you know, from everywhere. It was this like economically flourishing time, but then it was also this very like politically tense, so like socially tense time of like domestic politics and then international imperialism. So I was like, with all of these like juicy, meaty themes to deal with, like I'll just mush all of this together and then that'll be the book concept.
And what was the process like to write as a YA novel? As opposed to, it could be a historical fiction, it can be, you know, paranormal, like a whole book. Like, why a YA novel?
So actually, fun fact, I had set out to write it as YA and I never thought about it as anything other than YA. But after I signed with my agent, she was like, well, this actually could do well in adult as well. Like there's nothing that stops it from doing well in adult. Like you have the voice for it. And I was like shook because at that point I was like 19. So I was like, how did I accidentally write an adult book when I've like never read adult and I'm not even an adult, like what happened? But I think it was just the fact that like the story is like quite like expansive, like it doesn't just follow like one character and her growth arc, and it certainly exists, which is why it can function as YA. But because I think I had so many elements, it was so big, and like the world was very, like, it tried to tackle a lot of things at once. So it did have a place in adult, because adult tends to, like, try, like, you know, look at things with, like, a large eye, whereas YA is, like, a lot more, like, laser-focused, character-focused, which I like about it. So I was trying to do both, I guess, which is why, like, I guess it works as crossover. But, like, the reason why I, like, set out to do YA, honestly, is just because it was, like, all I knew. Like, it was, I'd grown up reading YA, I'd grown up writing YA with all the manuscripts prior to this one, so it never even, like, occurred to me that it couldn't be YA. So when I learned that, like, you know, it actually does have an audience, like, even outside of, like, my intended, like, audience of YA. So even though I wrote this for teenagers, I wrote this thinking teenagers would pick it up, like, people older than teenagers also enjoy it. Mm-hmm. So that was, like, all the better for me, I guess.
Yeah, as an adult reader who reads YA, I thought it was, like, I felt like it was, like, more grown up, like, you know, so it was, like, you know, it wasn't, like, a teenage experience, like, you, like, this is what it is. So I didn't realize you were 19 when you wrote this, because it read older, like, it read, like, an, you know, like, an adult, you know, novel, like an adult Romeo and Juliet retelling, you know?
Which I'm always surprised to hear about, because, like, even, like, Romeo and Juliet themselves are 18 and 19, so I was writing it at 18, 19, and I very much thought that it was just, like, an 18, 19-year-old's experiences. So then I hear that, like, it did, feel more mature, and I'm like, oh, well, that's, like, I mean, I'm pleasantly surprised, and I guess I'm giving the mature-feeling 18-year-olds representation in the world, so I like that.
That's awesome. So what can we expect for book two?
Ooh. We can expect more, I always just list out, like, more romance, more violence, more blood, more chaos, more yearning. Yeah. all of what you found in book one, but, like, you know, heightened even more, because we're coming in with a bang. It's the end of the duology. We've got to step it up even more.
So did you write both books at once, or did you write, like, knowing that this was going to be a duology, or what was the whole process? Yeah,
this is also a funny story. I initially wrote it as one manuscript. Mm-hmm. And when it was one manuscript, the story was actually quite different. Mm-hmm. So after it got picked up by Simon & Schuster, my editor actually said, I think this might work better as a duology. So if we split it and then have more time to flesh out the middle, it'll, like, there'll be a lot more time to develop a lot of the, because the cast is really big, right? There are a lot of main characters. So she was like, this will give us a lot more time to develop the cast and then, like, really split the plots a lot more, like, in a way that makes a lot more sense. So because of that, like, it made so much more sense to me as well. So I was like, yes, let's do it. And then it sort of, book one became more the monster focus, and now book two is more the blood feud and politics focus. So while the, like, initial story structure had always existed, I ended up splitting it, like, about 90% to book one, and then I kind of rewrote the ending a bit more before it became, like, what it is now. And then book two, I kind of kept, like, honestly, not a lot survived. Like, I thought I would be keeping the 10% ending, but then that changed a lot as well. Like, a lot of it now is just the themes that I originally pulled out, and then book two sort of became something, like, quite new, like, on its own. But it's because, like, book one kind of evolved on its own as well, then I had to, like, shift it to match. So it's been, like, an interesting kind of, like, process to, like, have known originally how the first story would have gone, and then to transform it entirely with, like, editing notes, which I think has made it so much stronger. But it's been so interesting to see, like, how it all evolves.
That's amazing. I'm, like, always curious to see, you know, how the series or duologies or trilogies come about, like, you know, and so it's interesting. So now let's go to round of book recommendations. This is an opportunity for you to share with the audience what they should read next. What is your favorite genre? I think I know what it is. But
Yeah, I mean, my favorite genre is definitely YA fantasy, but I also think I'm like not a picky reader at all, as long as it's YA. Like, I'm just, anything in YA, I do tend to read.
Mm-hmm. And so what has been a book that you read this year that you love?
Okay, so funnily, this is a YA contemporary rec that I really love. It's called Everything I Thought I Knew by Shannon Takalka, and it's coming out this month. So I read an advanced reader copy, but oh my god, it is so good. It's about this girl who gets a heart transplant, and then she has to like readjust to life, but like everything is not what it seems. So there's like a lot to do with like the multi-universe theory and like how like, you know, people and their choices like shape their lives. I wish I had this book in high school. Like, this is such a good book for people about to graduate high school who are trying to like decide what they want to do with their lives. Like, oh man, teens are gonna love it. It made me cry, like in a good way. Yeah, it's so good.
Oh my gosh, I can't wait to pick it up. So yeah. Tell us where we can find you online.
Find me online? Mm-hmm. Oh, I am at the Chloe Gong on just about everything. Twitter, Instagram, TikTok. Yeah, that's where you can find me. Yeah.
That's awesome. Thank you, Chloe, for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share with friends, subscribe, rate, and review the show. This is the easiest way to support this podcast. Once you connect with fellow romance readers and make new friends, get weekly book recommendations, attend monthly meetups, then join our Patreon community. You can join at whatyourextblog.com/Patreon. Romance lovers, check out Queen Bee Reads Etsy shop for cute and comfortable bookish apparel. The shop also features social justice apparel and fun items from some of your favorite TV shows like The Schitt's Creek and The Office. Use code WHATTOREAD10 to save. Visit whatyourextblog.com/QueenBeeReads. What to Read Next podcast is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Discover new podcasts to love on frolic.media/podcast. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyourextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.